You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I spoke to Ali Kraft, who is a civil engineer and a representative of Women in Urbanism, and I started by asking her what urbanism was to her and what an inclusive city is.
So I guess urbanism is about solutions or design around urban areas, and urban areas is obviously built-up areas rather than the rural area. Inclusive cities about thinking about all users, so it's disabled users, it's the elderly, it's women and it's children, and it's ensuring, I mean, I think the average white male is being catered for, so it's about thinking of the needs of the others, but something extra that is not always obvious.
Building on from that, would you agree that planning and urbanism and I guess even civil engineering and engineering has traditionally been somewhat of a male world?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I did civil, so it was better than some of the other engineering fields. But yeah, I mean, we all know that you just have to look at the amount of men entering those professions compared to women. It's the same things in architecture and planning and whatnot. So, definitely.
What has the path of women historically been in urbanism, both in planning and design?
Well, I guess that's the problem, right? It's who's making the decision and it's who are those professionals. And so I guess we are trying to push more and more to have women in the profession, which is really important because they've been the minority till now.
I guess as well, especially in the early years, because like it was kind of at a time where planning was kind of only, or urbanism was kind of only recognized academically, and because there was not that access to tertiary education for females at the time, I guess the voice has kind of been dampened significantly by that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's also like a changing time, you know, like cities were once, I guess, more inclusive anyway when they were more pedestrian focused, and I guess it went through a modernized era where it was all about the car, and yeah, women weren't there at the time, but there was more voices from, obviously, we've heard of, well, not obviously, that's the wrong word, but like people like Jane Jacobs were really influential in talking about if we're going to make cities for all, everyone needs to be involved in that design.
Exactly, like from my knowledge, which is relatively limited, I must say. Yeah, people like Jane Jacobs, and the name escapes me now, the lady who set up one of the kind of almost, I think it would be labeled as a commune now in California. I should have looked it up prior. they were initially only recognized in somewhat of advocacy roles rather than professional roles, but that's kind of where somewhere like Jane Jacobs kind of steps out, I guess, because So, like, now, at least in the courses that I've done, she's recognized as, like, one of the most influential thinkers.
Yeah, well, I guess it's interesting because, I mean, I've been involved in advocacy for a while, and sometimes advocacy is a really interesting thing because sometimes they're more powerful and they bring up more important issues than the professions themselves, because the professionals are getting paid by places like the councils and stuff, and it's people raising their voice who have the ability to do that, who seem to make really large changes too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as well that you can kind of see in different modes of planning, like in particular like advocacy planning and radical insurgent planning, because they aren't necessarily as tied to institutions, that they perhaps have the freedom and liberty to promote larger or more progressive ideas of change. However, perhaps in some cases they fall because they don't have the kind of official validation and legislation process of the changes that they want to make. Who would you say have been the most kind of like influential woman in shaping the city and the world today, whether that's a conceptual thing or a theoretical thing or like a favorite female urbanist?
Oh, well, definitely, like, I mean, we've already mentioned her, but I just think Jane Jacobs is incredible because, I mean, of the fact that she stopped Soho, but also, like, she's written books that now influence so many people in the urban planning field, and she didn't even have a degree in it, and I just think that's so awesome. But I think in terms of a modern lady, there's, I think it's Eva Carell in Vienna, and she's pretty cool. Over in Vienna, they have like a gender lens to urban design, and I think that's like a really cool modern thing in terms of like influential on like the retrofitting that we're doing right now with our cities. So I think it's great to think of Jane Jacobs, but it's cool to see like a modern example that you can follow.
Building off of that in two directions, Vienna and Zurich as well, both seem to have some quite interesting, progressive, like inclusive policies with how they design cities. So like, as weird as it sounds, like footpath widths, etc., being designed for either two prams to fit going opposing ways or two wheelchairs, or like slowing traffic light crossing for the average time it takes for either a mother and a toddler or an elderly person to get across.
Yeah, that's like exactly it. Like, it's interesting because it's all these things, like when we have males designing, like there's been like these incredible buildings in terms of we just build these massive motorways or massive buildings that like look maybe fantastic, but they create no like community and whatnot. And it's kind of interesting because the motorways and stuff like that, that works if you're just going, if you're commuting, but there's a lot of other people who have different activities during the day. And I guess if there's a really cool little pamphlet or graphics that was done on like the gender lens, and it's about thinking of things like whether there's enough seating for the elderly, or whether there's like, we use anti-slip paths, or things like playgrounds, like why is it that at a certain age there's no longer girls in the playground, and what do we need to do to address this to encourage both? And it's actually getting everyone around the table. There's some really cool stuff happening around the world, actually.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting to watch and see. You mentioned Jane Jacobs, and I'm going to harp back to her. You noted, and what is really incredible about Jane Jacobs is the fact that she wasn't formally qualified as a planner or with a degree in that area, yet she still managed to produce some of the like seminal texts of planning in books like The Death and Life of Great American Cities, among others. Do you think that planning, especially under the kind of grasp of the white male, perhaps mutes the kind of everyday person?
Well, we definitely have to do more to like address everyone's needs. That's the whole thing, is like that's why we need more women in this industry, so that, because they often have like, I guess, a softer touch of things, and maybe there's more of a caring, nurturing to like consider things, especially like children and whatnot, because they're often the caregivers.
It's a interesting thing, because everybody experiences the city in one way or another, but somehow for so long it was only crafted by one stereotype of person's vision for the city, whereas, like, yeah, as I said, everyone operates in the city. So why isn't everyone represented in how we change our cities? Do you think that there's a distinctive difference in the voice of female urbanists to male urbanists?
Well, I think, like, to be honest, these days, especially in like maybe urban design, I think there is like a lot of fighting for the same kind of things, but this, like more like traditional professions, like I think engineering, are still kind of a little bit sometimes stuck in what they're designing for. Yeah, and so I think there is a difference in places like engineering. But I think there's a change as well. I do think like this, there's advocates that are male and female. It's not just female who are fighting for these changes, like these advocates. I don't want to say that it's not, there's not men involved, but I think women in urbanism is like powerful because there is underrepresentation of women, and it's about having an extra voice to saying like, if we were included, we might be able to push further for these like inclusive ideas, which it's definitely not just females fighting for it, but I think it's having a different voice to the table, you know, highlights it again.
Would you say the increased inclusion of women has been intersectional? So like all female voices being represented, or would you say relatively similar, I would argue, to the start of male involvement in planning? Is it still kind of a white or Pākehā dominated industry?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that like we would like to have more membership. But what I like about women in urbanism is that it's not exclusive to people in the profession, because we realise, obviously, through people like Jane Jacobs, that everyone has something to give to the discussion, and so that's why it's, we've been very encouraging about like having mothers involved and a lot of people who aren't trained in it but are interested in contributing to like solving them and creating different solutions to what's happening at the moment. But yes, I agree, we're, definitely in terms of cultural diversity, we can always do better.
How do our social spaces shape our behaviour, in your opinion?
Well, it's really interesting. It's not written by a female, but my favourite book of all times is actually Happy City, and that's all about how the way we design our city impacts the way we treat others. And so it's kind of concepts about having fast-moving spaces versus slow-moving spaces. So if you have heaps of little shops, and we, I guess in terms of like women and urbanism, because we're a lot concerned about like safety on the streets, that females feel safe, is the idea that when you have little shops, there's lots of people around and it feels safe. And actually they've proven that people are more helpful. Whereas if you have like blank bank walls, for example, it's called fast-moving spaces because people move as fast as they can, and they're apparently not as helpful. So it's incredible how the way we design our cities impacts the way we can treat others. Even like, for example, you know, it's been in the media lately, is that kind of like that third space idea, is like, you know, providing places for not just people who have money. Like, it's great to meet in a bar, but having places, you know, libraries good or playgrounds where that people can actually enjoy the city without spending money.
You don't always consider these things when you're walking through a city, but no. There has been a lot of thought going into them.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, for example, you know, like we, one woman in urbanism member was, you know, pulled off her bike when she was on K Road. And it's like, what's really cool is hopefully, I think more and more designs of like cycleways are coming out that are like separated, and that's really cool that we're starting to think. I mean, obviously it's not separated for exactly for that harassment reason, but it's another pro of why we, how separating and how the way, our thought pattern now that we're trying to think of like more confident users. So you can't just paint a cycleway on a 50 or 60K road and expect people to go and use it. It's too frightening. You actually have to separate them.
This is a very naive question, and it's just to play the role that every so often I hear. Can we really prevent things like sexual harassment using design and urban design?
I think, you know, obviously like one of the things we had, there was a survey done by Women in Urbanism, and 70% of the respondents said that they had been harassed in some form on public transport. And that's obviously like a cultural problem as well, but it's about obviously raising awareness, and it's not, and we need things, for example, we don't even really have a way of like reporting it as such, you know, some people don't really speak out, or there's nowhere they should speak out about it. But in terms of design, I guess like it's things like bus frequency, so you don't have to stay at that stop the whole time and wait, you know, like if you miss the bus, and then suddenly you're alone at station, or it's having like lighting to the path. It's actually some of the most important part is that first and end of the journey with public transport, is ensuring that Axia feels safe.
Yeah, most definitely. I've got one last question. What current projects really interest you?
I guess I'm like super excited for the City Rail Link. I mean, we know women take PT more than men, and I just think it's that whole thing I was talking about, frequency, especially from the West, it's going to open it up, and the fact that you don't have to be car dependent, I think it's, I mean, it should have happened a long time ago, but at least it's happening now. And I guess I'm quite excited. I recently moved up from Wellington, and it is pretty cool just to see what's happening around Auckland, that it really does feel like it's moving in the right way. I think that they're getting so squeezed that they are having to make positive change and more towards sustainable transport, so that kind of really excites me.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.